KBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. The NTSB launching a special investigation into Norfolk Southern following a series of incidents at the railroad. Stocks dropping on Wall Street after the Federal Reserve Chair, Jerome Powell, told the Senate panel the central bank could speed up rate hikes to further cool inflation.
We're well aware that this particular situation involves a mix of forces, not all of which our tools can affect, but there is a job here for us to do in better aligning demand with supply.
Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell saying he stands by U.S. Capitol Police in its dispute with Fox News after Tucker Carlson defended the mob that attacked the Capitol on January 6th.
The chief of the Capitol Police, in my view, correctly describes what most of us witnessed firsthand on January 6th.
In an internal memo, Capitol Police Chief Thomas Manger called the Fox commentary offensive and misleading. This is ABC News. Japan's space agency intentionally destroyed a new H-3 rocket minutes after launch due to an ignition failure that comes 3 weeks after an aborted launch due to a separate issue. Guns and abortion among the issues Florida governor promises action on.
During his State of the State address today, Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis indicating that he'll support a new bill introduced by a state senator that would ban abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. It allows for exceptions of rape and incest if a woman can prove she was a victim.
I think those exceptions are sensible, and like I said, we welcome pro-life legislation.
The White House says those restrictions would infringe on women's freedom and reproductive rights. Florida's ban on abortions after 15 weeks is now facing legal challenges. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Reese's peanut butter cups are going vegan. Hershey says its new plant-based peanut butter cups, going on sale this month, be the first ever vegan chocolate sold nationally. Andy Field, ABC News.
Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matt-Mayer. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin Republicans are preparing to block a new policy from Governor Evers requiring students to get vaccinated twice against meningitis and tightening student chickenpox vaccination mandates. In a message to constituents, GOP State Senator Steve Noss called the new rules arbitrary and capricious. A public hearing on the policy is set for today. People who use the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as SNAP, received $82 less this month. Some households saw a $250 drop in benefits for groceries. The pandemic-era assistance ended for 32 states, including Wisconsin, this month. On average, people who qualify for SNAP will now get about $6 per day per person. Food banks across the state preparing for an increase in demand as households cope with the loss of benefits and higher food prices. I'm Jane Matt-Mayer. This is Civic Media News.
5 hours of special spring primary election coverage. A dozen reporters, hosts, and political experts tracking results for you around Wisconsin.
Everything from your local races to the Supreme Court.
Janet Protasiewicz and Dan Kelly moving on to the general election.
Coverage you won't find anywhere else. And we're doing it all again for the important general election in April.
Elections or anytime, we're here for you. Your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Heat, power, and water are things people cannot take for granted. The elderly, disabled, the veterans. With record increases in basic costs of living, people are struggling to keep these services on and their bills paid. If you are in danger of losing heat, power, or water, call 1-800-506-5596 or apply online at heat.help. You may not ask for it, but the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help.
Cardall put out these weird, sad videos interviewing incapacitated elders in their nursing homes that don't have the ability to say, don't use me as your political prop.
If they are what you say they are, then you shouldn't be doing it how you did it.
Yes, it was the kids using the parents as props. Well, my old man hasn't talked since 76. Of course he would have voted for Trump. That's the evidence. Videos. People that can't talk.
It is wrong. So it's absolutely wrong.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com. Earl Ingram.
I mean, for heaven's sakes, anybody who's heard Congresswoman Bobart from Colorado and Marjorie Taylor Greene and others, you just have to ask the question, if I'm a Republican, why would I continue to support that foolishness?
Asking the tough questions, searching for the answers we're all looking for. The Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings 8 to 11 on Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen.
For late nights writing English papers.
For your teen's music taste.
For dinners where they talk more on their phone than with you.
For the first time, they call you mom.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen, and you can't imagine the reward.
To learn more about adopting a teen, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a Civic Media radio station. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. You know, the one thing that yesterday's show brought up is, you know, we're not talking about the future enough. We're not pushing bold vision of what the future of work in this country is going to look like. And got a bunch of emails from folks, you know, calling me on the reality that we're not. If you remember yesterday, I actually gave Tucker Carlson credit for coming out and saying that he would be totally against automated trucks on the highways, that they should stop. They should never allow automated trucks on the road. And his statement was, because those are jobs for people. It is the number one job for high school educated men in this country. His words, he talked about a social compact, which I got to tell you, quite shocked to hear coming out of his mouth, since everything Republicans and conservatives have been doing the last 40 years has been tearing at that social compact. Now, as I said yesterday, the reality is Tucker knows there's no way you're stopping this animal from happening. Even I've been saying, you're not going to stop it. We need to legislate it. We need to regulate it. We need to tax it. We need to do a bunch of things to make it a little bit more costly so it slows down a little bit so that workers don't get screwed over like we do in every single technological change. But he's taking a position, nope, not going to allow it, because he knows it's going to happen. And it's going to give him the position to go, well, I was against it. Oddly enough, he's not against all the other automation. It's just this one, because this affects the audience, the people that put money into his pocket. But it got a lot of folks reaching out to me going, you know, you're right. We need to be thinking in visionary, futuristic, big thoughts. And I came across last week, and I forgot about it, that there's evidently a couple of Pennsylvania lawmakers are in the process of drafting a bill that would create a four-day work week here in Pennsylvania. As I understand it, and the details are murky at this moment, a little murky, but they're proposing some kind of a tax credit system that, you know, for employers who offer this four-day work week, kind of the carrot. You know, the goal, offer a carrot so that the businesses will go, hey, I'll get this money and it'll be a win for me and I'll get happier workers. So the idea is they're going to propose this legislation to shorten the work weeks by giving these tax credits to corporations to do this. And the weird thing is, you know, this is, I think, going to eventually happen in my lifetime. I view this in the same light that you go back and you read the history of the 8-hour day. Under the flag of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will.
Now remember, they came from the 6 days a week, sun up to sundown work day. You're talking, 72 hours, 80 hours a week, down to an 8 hour day, 48 hours a week. This is one of those things. Post pandemic, workers have lifted their head, much like they did back in that era, and began to ask the question, do I work to live or do I live to work? And now you've got people who have seen the light, have seen, hey, I like my wife and kids. Hey, I like my husband and children. Hey, that house I pay for, that place I live, I like being there more often. I like doing other things. And people have taken to it. And this purely the pandemic at work, in my view. So back in 2020, you had the World Economic Forum, who did their future of work, the future of jobs predictions. And what they predicted back then was 40% of all jobs were going to eventually be remote. I think it's probably going to be at some point higher than that, but they predicted a very rapid expansion. Now, couple that with the reality that back in 2020 as well, same Economic World Forum, they said that half of all tasks that we currently do, that was back in 2020, would be done by automation by 2025. That we would be losing a lot of jobs, but it would create millions of jobs because, again, we would be doing different things, but it was almost going to be an offset. The 97 million jobs that they claimed would be created by automation and robotics and all this stuff would certainly be offset by, sorry, you want fries with that, no longer a job. So, this came into my head, and as I'm reading through the literature on the four-day work week, because evidently the UK did a massive study on the four-day work week. A whole bunch of the biggest companies in the country or in the UK got together and did this global study. It is considered the biggest single country trial in the world. 73 companies, 3,300 employees, and they've now concluded this study. And what they found, not surprisingly, they found that 97% of the workers would like the four-day work week to be permanent. And it's not just because they got to stay home or they more often or what. They were more productive. And this is the thing, they're more productive, happier, had better life-work balance, better physical, better mental health. There was so many things for the individual worker, so much better. Also good for the employer, because oddly enough, this is the weird thing. You go, well, gee, you get the happy for the worker thing. They only have to go to work 4 days a week. Productivity actually went up. Employers on the whole gave it a 7.7 out of 10 approval rating. What they found is companies that took part in this actually saw their revenue increase by 8% over the trial period, and were almost 38% higher at the same point in 2021. Hiring was up, absenteeism was down. Even during the great quit, during the great resignation, they had far fewer people leaving. Because this is what people want. Give the people what they want. So I look at this and go, is this something that's going to stick here? Because you've got this kind of power dynamic that the control mongers want to have. You got to be in the office where I can keep my eye on you. Now you have happier employers. The employers are happy. Profits are up. Productivity's up. Things are good. Employees are thrilled. In fact, 9 out of 10 of the employees are thrilled with it. Less burnout, less fatigue, less stress, more time home with the kids, better life-work balance. All of the positive things that we talk about. One of the big things that they took from this study is the time men spent with their children increased by 27%. Again, this is one of those things you should be grabbing the family value folks going, hey, hey, this is something you should be, yeah, that. Now, interestingly enough, you know, that 27% is an interesting number because it's the exact amount of time that was spent in the commute. So, you know, dad got, instead of driving back and forth to work, sitting in traffic, breathing exhaust fumes, bumper to bumper, you know, road raging, you know, telling the driver next to him they're number one, they're at home with the kids. That's kind of impressive. Now, I've said for years, we should have been pushing for a shorter work week for years. This is something I've been calling for years, and I've wanted my labor friends to get behind. Never really the kind of push. You know, every recession that pops up, I say this all the time, every recession that pops up, I start calling for this four-day work week and then have something like unemployment fill in the gaps. But given the fact that productivity in this study remained the same and in a lot of cases went up, this is one of those moments where you go, why should you take a pay cut for a four-day work week when you're doing 5 days of work? Now, what they also found in this study, to be fair, is that a lot of people were doing work on their quote-unquote day off. A lot of people weren't doing full days on those 4 days. They were breaking it up. They had some autonomy over their work schedule. They had a better life-work balance, made them happier, made them more productive. Yeah, kind of a great scenario. Now, immediately, I get people go, well, you know, you're a union guy. Unions would never go for that. Yeah, they would. You could negotiate just about anything, but there've got to be parameters. You can work on your day off if you want. You're just not forced to. And this is one of those things, again, if you're happier doing what you're doing, you're going to do it, right? What's that old saying? If you find something that you love for work, you'll never work a day in your life. This is kind of that same thing. Now, again, my mind, depression during the recessions has always been, you know, how do we keep people attached to their jobs? How do we not? Very, very, very working class ethic. Very fixing short-term problems, not looking down the road and going, hey, this should be a permanent movement. We're at a moment right now where there has to be a call. There has to be a call to revisit the Fair Labor Standards Act and take that 40-hour work week down. We've got to start pushing for a 32 or a 30-hour work week. Because understand, automation is going to be doing a lot of jobs. There's going to be a lot of technological production. There's going to be a lot of productivity because of computers. And a handful of people are going to be the ones who are going to benefit from this. So for me, by shortening the number of hours that people can work, we share the technological gains. This has not been talked about yet, and I think it's incredibly important because we need more people attached to work. If computers and robots are doing all the jobs, what do humans do? What do we, the people, do? This is one of those things where nobody wants to work 100 hours a week. Some of us do because we're stupid. But if you could support yourself on 30 hours a week, spend more time with your wife or husband, spend more time with your kids, spend more time pursuing other passions, wouldn't you? And the answer is yes. So for me, this could be that moment. This could be that moment where the labor movement leads, and I'm hoping that someone does. It says, look, it's time to revamp those 80-some-year-old, 90-year, those 80-plus-year-old labor laws and update them for today. That gives workers the ability to have some flexibility in their day, shorter work weeks, shorter days, but still protections from abuse. And, you know, I'm sure there's somebody out there going, no, we could never have a shorter work week or shorter work day. Of course we could. You know, I go back to during the Depression, and this is where, look, I'm not the brightest bulb in the box. You know, the idea of having a shortened work week and then having another entity, you know, kick in a little bit to make up the difference is not new. The Kellogg Corporation, under the robber baron who owned Kellogg's, during the Depression had a 6-hour workday. So they would come in 5 days, 6 hours, 30-hour work week, but got paid for 40 because they knew that there was a job shortage going on. You needed to keep people employed. You needed to keep people with money for the local economy to keep moving so families didn't lose their homes, so kids didn't be running the streets desperate. There was societal, there was a social compact, to steal Tucker Carlson's frame. There was something there for everybody. And the employer class of that period, the benevolent employer class, the robber barons of the era, somewhat understood that. The question is, will the robber barons of today get it? And then why aren't we pushing for it? So we're going to have a couple of the legislators from Pennsylvania on this week to talk about their proposed legislation and what this could mean. I personally think this should be a rallying cry for every worker. We need to come up with a good slogan like 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will. We need to update it for the 21st century so that we're saying, you know, 4 days off, 4 days a week or 6 hour days or whatever it is. But we need to update and revive that 40-hour work week and start beginning to claw that back. The last time that I can remember reading about a real push was in the 1950s when one of the radio broadcast unions was pushing for a 30-hour work week. I think they even asked for a 28. This is the time. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you in favor of a 4-day work week? Can you see the value? Can you see how it would be more productive? Or are you stuck on the old, got to go to the 40 hours? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Elon Musk, remember yesterday we talked about Elon Musk not being able to go to the little boys' room unless he was accompanied by two big, bulky bodyguards? Remember that? Well, today, another edition of As the Elon Goes. Evidently, Elon, he's been kind of like a daily distraction, if you think about it. And Exhibit A on why you shouldn't give one person as much power as this guy's got because of the enormous wealth he's got. Evidently, how this story goes is he bought a company and a guy negotiated himself a job under a contract that if he ever got fired, you have to pay him a huge amount of money. So the guy said, I want to work for the company because I've built this component, this part of this company. I'm selling it to Twitter because Twitter's a bigger company. It's going to help build my vision of what I can do. And I want to be part of this. So my contract in selling this is that I remain a part of it. And that makes a lot of sense. Now, this is a disabled guy from Iceland. Just so we get the context, a guy in a wheelchair from Iceland who's, you know, a computer genius. Evidently smart enough to get himself a contract. A working person who goes, you know what? Hey, I should have a contract because, you know, a handshake doesn't make it anymore. So evidently, Elon maybe fired him, maybe didn't fire him. They weren't really sure for a couple of days. And I guess, you know, Elon Musk even made fun of his disability on Twitter, you know, saying, well, he can't type, you know, just some stupid stuff that you would expect from Elon. The reason I bring this up is not because a rich guy, you know, ended up firing another person at Twitter. The reason I bring this up is the guy's in the power seat because he's like, fine, go ahead, fire me. You fire people all the time. You lay people off all the time. It's not a big deal. I understand it. Are you going to honor your the contract I have? And this for me is another one of those moments where, you know what? Okay, you don't want me part of your company? Okay, I'm willing to go. But you got to honor the contract. And for me, you know, we could spend all day talking about the stuff that's going on with that. For me, what I took from the whole conversation in the Twitter thread that was very interesting, funny, and you know, just should be a Netflix series, is that working people need contracts. Because this guy's like, you know, fine, do with me what you want, but are you going to pay me? And if you're not, well, there's a court system for this. And I'm hoping that's the lesson that comes from that. I'm hoping that this is the lesson that ends up resonating at some point. And again, I hope my friends in labor point that out, that working people need to have, you know, that signed document that says these are the wages, hours, conditions. These are the things that we agree to. These are the things that you agree to. And this is what happens if either of us break them. That's kind of an important thing. So as I'm looking at this, and I'm going to be following now. I'm actually following the guy because I got to know if he's going to get the $100,000 that the firing him will get him. We will see. Speaking of money, and you know, or if Elon's check bounces. Speaking of money and the possibility of a check bouncing. Evidently, the House is preparing for a default. Evidently, the House Ways and Means Committee will soon be taking up a piece of legislation to require certain payments of government. So, you know, they're going to try and make sure that when they breach the debt ceiling, it's only going to hurt certain people. I'll let that sink in. It's only going to hurt certain people. And you got to wonder who those certain people might be. You know, poor single mothers who've got mouths to feed. You know, seniors living in nursing homes. I don't know. The workers who work for the federal government. You know, the hundreds of thousands of people who their lives depend on collecting that paycheck for coming and doing their work. What we're seeing is we're seeing them set up what is a political hit job. This debt ceiling is ridiculous. It should have never been put into place. It is plain dumb. And what they love to play on is they love to play on the idea that all of us think government operates like our kitchen table, that there is an absolute hard cap on our credit card and we can never go over. And if we do, there are, you know, all these horrible things that happen. That's not how government works. At the end of the day, our government is the backstop for everything else. If the roads and bridges need to be replaced, they need to be replaced. If there's a catastrophe, you need to raise funds to be able to take care of that. If you have hungry children, we need to be feeding them. We need to make sure that people don't go hungry on the streets. Now, what's interesting is there are people on the far right who would be okay with your children going to bed hungry tonight. They're okay with that. And I'll bet you they'd make a religious justification for it. Blaming you for being poor, you must have done something, made, you know, someone mad. It's twisted to me how we've taken religion and turned it into some kind of angry thing. And I'll bet you they're going to come back and they're going to say the debt ceiling is part of this as well. You know who's going to get hurt in this debt ceiling fight? Working people like you and me. those government workers who were, again, stuck in the middle. Poor, hungry families. Those are the people who are going to get hurt. But again, the cruelty is always the point.
The Shaw 101 FM. The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. The NTSB launching a special investigation into Norfolk Southern following a series of incidents at the railroad. Stocks dropping on Wall Street after the Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell told a Senate panel the central bank could speed up rate hikes to further cool inflation.
We're well aware that this particular situation involves a mix of forces, not all of which our tools can affect, but there is a job here for us to do in better aligning demand with supply.
Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell saying he stands by U.S. Capitol Police in its dispute with Fox News after Tucker Carlson defended the mob that attacked the Capitol on January 6th.
The chief of the Capitol Police, in my view, correctly describes what most of us witnessed firsthand on January 6th.
In an internal memo, Capitol Police Chief Thomas Manger called the Fox commentary offensive and misleading. This is ABC News.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. A Sheboygan woman accused of strangling one of her children and trying to drown the other about a year ago might change her plea next month. Natalia Hitchcock pleaded insanity at first. At the time, Hitchcock told police she felt that someone was controlling her mind. Now there's a new plea hearing set for next month. More than 200 people will soon be out of a job in Eau Claire. Hutchinson Technology tells the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development it's laying off about 55% of its employees in Eau Claire. A city official tells Channel 13 Hutchinson is vulnerable to market changes. The company did not respond to a request for comment. In sports, the Badgers are on the lookout for a new men's hockey coach. Tony Granato was fired yesterday. Tonight, the Bucks are at Orlando. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
It's a whole new game with the Civic Media Network and our local stations carrying coverage of Marquette men's basketball in the Big East Conference Tournament. Play gets underway this Thursday when the number one seeded Golden Eagles tip off at 11 a.m. against the winner of the St. John's University Butler matchup. Catch all the action on WXCO 1230 a.m., 98.9 FM in Wausau. In the Nakusa area, dial up WIRI 105.5 FM. Every step of the Big East Tournament. Find Marquette on these local Civic Media radio stations and on the Civic Media app.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. Was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms.
Yeah. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Mom's early Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
And when I left the oven on, we decided together that it was time to see a doctor and make a plan.
Early detection gave us more time to seek out information and support as a family.
If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. For more information, visit alz.org/timetotalk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
You let him try violin because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
New Gallup poll out.
It's actually a little shocking, to be honest. It's as low as it is.
Record low, 15% of Americans view China favorably. 15%. It's dropped 38 points since 2018. And I guess coming out of the pandemic, to be honest, when you didn't get enough PPE and you realize that our supply chain is so heavily dependent on China and that we can't, you know, buy a new car or do half the things we need to do, and inflation's part of our supply chain. Maybe I do understand why it's that low. Maybe it should be lower. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, you know, maybe why this is so low, and to share some of his testimony from the House Select Committee on Chinese Communist Party while examining China-U.S. relations. That's our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it is great to be with you tonight.
So what do you think of the polling? I mean, 15%, is that high for you, low for you? Where would you see that?
I kind of agree with you. That is super low. I mean, you got to work hard to get an approval that low. It's not just people don't like you. You actually have to take active steps. And I have a feeling part of that is probably the spy balloon. Right? I mean, that certainly dominated headlines for a while. But to the point that you raised up in the intro, I think some of this has been the actions of the government, at the beginning of and since the pandemic, with the, as you pointed out, kind of the PPE, the response to begin with, the very real possibility that the origin of this is not what China says it was, may have come from a lab, and more intelligence units within the federal government are saying that might be, that might be the source of it. And so I think all of that adds up, and any of the other news you hear about it is like they're thinking about helping Russia. They're certainly helping them economically. They say really aggressive things towards Taiwan. There's a hole that has been dug that unfortunately is getting deeper every day without anybody's help at all.
No, the reason I bring that up and I ask the question is if anything, I mean, because we are a polarized country, we are a divided country. We've got red hats and blue hats. If anything could make us put our red hats and blue hats down, it seems like it would be this. This seems like something we could agree on. And I bring up the fact that you testified in front of this House Select Committee on Chinese Communist Party, a Republican committee. This seems like a perfect opportunity to go, hey, maybe we should all kind of coalesce around this idea that we should be making stuff here. I know we've been talking about this for, you know, at least, you know, 15 years, but maybe now's the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's beginning to be that time, and at least for Rick, I will say, I think that everybody now agrees that we have a problem. Okay, and not everybody was there before, right? They're like, oh, maybe there were some jobs lost, but it's helping consumers, or we're not even in a Cold War, let's not worry as much. And so I think now members of Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, are firmly in the camp that there's a problem to be dealt with here. I would say, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask now, you testified, on how we can maybe move down the road to fixing this, because I think everybody's ready, at least everybody I talk to, is finally where I was 10, 15 years ago, domestic production for domestic consumption. I think, and one of the great things that this president is doing, and the reason I love Joe Biden, is we're moving in that direction. Not as fast as I would like, and there are reasons for that, but we are moving in that direction. And you talked about some of the things that could help us move in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, I came with a list of ideas. I often think that it's one thing to present the problem, and that was part of my job and part of my task there was to say why this is a problem. But I also think that it's incumbent on us to suggest solutions as well that are actionable. And for me, those solutions included the investments that you referred to, and that's building on what we saw with semiconductors, with clean energy manufacturing, with infrastructure, expanding into a lot of other areas of domestic production. Pharmaceuticals comes to mind. Specialty metals, rare earth minerals processing. I mean, there's almost an endless list of this. I mean, the Biden administration had a 1,400-page supply chain report. You just got to basically look at that and dive into it. Then the other aspect of it is holding the Chinese Communist Party accountable for its behavior. And some of that has to do with trade policy, with tariffs, or enforcing the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act designed to bar goods coming from the region of China where there is a genocide and forced labor taking place, you know, sharpening up our own trade tools a little bit, screening the outbound investment. I mean, I think a lot of people, and this is some of the feedback I got from the testimony, folks were like, man, I didn't realize the numbers were that big. That's a real problem. I was like, well, yeah, this has been building up. There is more than $1 trillion worth of U.S. company investment in China, you know, $600 billion of intellectual property theft, you know, a $380 billion annual trade deficit with China. So this is not trivial. This is real stuff, and it's going to take very sharp tools to get at it. So reviewing the investments that companies are trying to make in China and stopping them if they are going to hurt our productive capacity in the United States, I think is also going to be an important
piece. No, that's a big thing. And to your point, there was a story I read today. Maybe you saw this billionaire investor, Mark Mobius, is his name. He said that, you know, China is actually restricting people from taking money out of the country. He said he's got a giant HSBC account in Shanghai. He said he can't get his money out. Because they're restricting the flow out of the country. And it's something I've been saying for years. We need to have capital borders. I think we need to have borders. We've got people who are hell-bent on the southern border, yet we got products going back and forth. You got money going back and forth. I'm a big supporter of borders.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that having, border adjustability with respect to taxes, tariffs, all of this, I think is very important to making sure that we're defending our workers, our innovation base, our security. I think that's all critically important because one of the points that I made to the committee members was that, you know, you're allured by this promise of cheap consumer prices, and yeah, t-shirts are cheap, right? Now they're cheap in a number of different ways, and people don't know or care how they're made, which is a big problem. But in exchange for that, if you view that somehow as an attribute, we've given up the keys to the 21st century economy. We've handed them to the Chinese Communist Party. And it's clear now that the Chinese Communist Party is not going to give them back and is going to try to design the rules in a way to benefit itself at the expense of all of us. And that's going to be a problem. When it comes to all of these industries where we're deeply leveraged into China and trying to get that out, like antibiotics, a great example of that, or rare earth mineral processing. You know, almost all of what I just described in the entire world takes place in China right now. Just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing is you talk to the average person, they have no idea how we got into this mess. And I mean, this is 20 years. This is not, you know, in the grand scheme of time, this is a blip on, you know, us being the producer of the world to our now being hyper dependent. In fact, yesterday I read a story over at the Wall Street Journal that said the headline, U.S. not ready for great power conflict. And they went through that we're not ready to get into a war. I know we're got the most powerful military in the history of civilization. You got to put that caveat out there. But we're not ready to build the machinery. We're not willing to fix this stuff. We don't have the productive capacity.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And the article you referred to, and I don't want to alarm people because our hope is that we're preventing a war or conflict with China by having the right kind of deterrence and the right kind of policy and ensuring that China knows that we won't stand for aggression.
I'm a Teddy Roosevelt fan.
Walk softly and
carry a big stick. Walk softly part's something we struggle with, but yeah, I think you still have the big stick.
Yeah, that's right. And in this article referred to war games that take place, and these are simulations, and they're very important to understand, but in all of these simulations, if China were to invade Taiwan with amphibious landings, it's estimated that we would run out of missiles in the Pacific theater in a week. In a week, we'd be done. We'd be out of missiles. And so, and you can't just grow them on trees. I mean, they take, you know, months and years to produce because they're very high tech, and they cost some money. And so, you know, it is like, you know, we need to arm Ukraine. We totally need to do that. And I just, you know, I hate to say let's enlarge our defense budget because we spend so much already, but we can certainly devote more of that to stuff that we're going to need. Yeah. In the case of a strategic conflict.
Or more importantly, we need to have manufacturing capacity that we could transition, that yes. we could move over. I mean, you go back to the lesson that I learned from World War II, and maybe I learned the wrong one, is have your own energy supply, which we do, and yeah. have a manufacturing base that you can then turn into war production in the event that you need to, and we did that.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. It was our friends, the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, and our defense industrial base and our energy independence that made all the difference, right, in that. Those are things you couldn't take away from us. Now, unfortunately, with respect to our defense industrial base, you've seen a degradation of that. And so we have to, in a sense, ration the arms that we're giving to Ukraine because we're running low on stock, and then we've discovered that as low as we are, our allies are even worse shape. They haven't been making the stuff they're supposed to be making as well. And so, you know, it is we should be spending the federal budget on things that are going to be investing in our country. We also need to make sure that we have the deterrence to protect our own borders and our alliances as well. Yep. And so that's going to be a big piece of this as we move ahead.
No, I'm right there with you. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Scott Paul. Scott's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. You can check out the incredible work they do. Now, one of the things you talk about that we've talked about in the past that I think is really important, ending normalized trade status. Ending the permanent normal trade relation status that China has. I don't think we should have ever given it to them. I've said for years it was a huge mistake. I know they were going to come along. They were going to be, you know, it's the same thing with Mexico. Their wages were going to come up and all of that. And, you know, the crazy guy with the big ears was right. Giant sucking sound. Same thing with China. It was worse, though. Is it possible to end that and that decoupling? You know, were you asked about this? What pain would be part of that decoupling?
Right, right. It's a good point. And to all your Gen Z listeners who don't know who the guy with the big ears is this Ross Perot, by the way. He's in your history books, probably as a footnote, but he was actually right about this. You're right, Rick. So the normalized trade relations, and I focused on this. I said, look, you know. China, you know, and this is very clear, you know, the Chinese Communist Party, they do central planning. Every 5 years, they have a plan. It's written out. We can see what they were doing. They had a program called Made in China 2025, where they said, we want to dominate all these industries globally. So it wasn't a secret. It wasn't like we had to spy on them to figure this out. They get it. But even with all of that evidence, we still made it worse. We made it worse. First, we gave them this normalized trade relations, which basically gives China 0% tariffs on almost every product coming to the United States, except for the ones, by the way, where we've added tariffs in the interim. And we didn't hold them accountable in any way when there was cheating on trade. So it was huge. So yes, we should suspend normal trade relations with China. If we suspend it, then that gives the president and the Congress some leverage on how to adjust the tariffs so that we can tighten the screws if we need to and see what the response is and see if there's, you know, and do it in a way where we can reshore stuff. I think that would be very important. And look, this is a bill, I think there's definitely a version in the Senate side that has like four or five Republican co-sponsors. I think there's a Democratic version that's going to get introduced. There's going to be a competition for all of this. But I just want to make a point about this, Rick, before we leave this topic, is that, you know, that suggestion, my testimony, all of this. This has prompted outcries from the elite opinion makers. Fareed Zakaria, Max Boot, these are two guys who write columns in the Washington Post, you know, very serious people. Fareed Zakaria says, we have to stop this groupthink on China, that it's a strategic, you know, challenge for the United States. Otherwise, it's going to lead us down the road to conflict. And this groupthink is dangerous. And, you know, my thinking on this actually was not groupthink. I mean, we were very much the outliers at the beginning of this. And opinion has come around. The groupthink is people like Fareed Zakaria who were saying, this is a slam dunk with China. Why are we even having this debate? Yeah. We shouldn't even have this debate. This debate is stupid. I mean, Bill Clinton basically, this is a stupid debate to have. 20 years from now, we'll be wondering why we even had this debate. It's such a slam dunk. And then Max Boot, columnist for the Post, said that basically the same thing. It's like, this thing is so one-sided, all the information they're presenting. It's like, no, actually, these are all the facts. I have 50 footnotes in my testimony of where the facts came from. They're just upset that the Chamber of Commerce and the big businesses aren't getting their way on this stuff for a welcome change.
That's it. But here's the thing, and this is the part, and this is where I want to end this up. If we do this right, and this angers me too, and we've talked about this, you know, reshoring manufacturing is going to be costly. We're going to have to invest in infrastructure. In fact, today the story out is evidently Siemens is going to be bringing a $220 million rail car factory to North Carolina. Because we're going to be investing in rail cars. Yeah. We're going to be investing in infrastructure. We're building stuff. This is good for business. Now, the weird thing is would Zakaria and Boot want those rail cars made in China and shipped here to be used? I would think they say, yeah, that's what they would want. And I have a problem with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. And I just, I don't, I was like, look, did you guys wake up from like a Rip Van Winkle nap from the 90s and end up here? Because we've had like 20 years of this neoliberal BS that we've seen.
Yep.
And we know how it works. We know how the script works. I mean, National Democrats have flipped on this for good.
About time.
Yeah, it's about time. And you know, Trump, even though, you know, he did a lot of business in China, at least from a policy perspective, he put tariffs on Chinese products. So that has flipped too. And all these guys are so upset about it. And it's like, where were you for the last 20 years? You were cheerleading China. You're saying this is going to fundamentally change China. It's going to open up. There's no way they can contain all of this. It's going to be more democratic. It's going to be more open. They're going to play by the rules, blah, blah, blah. And what we got was job losses, broken promises, and the Select Committee, which I hope does a lot of stuff to undo this damage.
Now, I hope they do as well. I look at those two, and I'll be honest with you. I can only think they've never lost a job or had to look a family in the eye that lost that factory job and have ended up losing their homes, or worse yet, the suicide rates and the domestic violence and the alcoholism and all of the negatives that have come to those communities that we saw last October as we traveled through a number of Midwestern states. This what our president is doing, what Joe Biden is doing, is about damn time, and it's the right thing, and we should all be getting behind it. Take off the red hat and the blue hat, get a hard hat, and let's get to work. That's simple. Scott, appreciate the time, man.
You bet. Thank you, Rick. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Good stuff, as always. Our good friend Scott Paul. Check out his website, Alliance for AmericanManufacturing.org. He is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1942. That was the day a house fire claimed the life of a true champion for working people. Lucy Gonzalez Parsons was born in Texas. Most of her childhood is a mystery, but it is thought she was born into slavery and was African American, Mexican American, and Native American. After the Civil War, she met and married a Confederate soldier. Albert Parsons. The couple had to leave Texas because they were in danger due to their anti-segregationist activism. They came to Chicago, where they became involved in the city's labor movement. Albert edited The Alarm, a newspaper for working people. Lucy helped to write for the paper. Together, they supported the fight for the 8-hour workday, giving speeches throughout the city. Albert was one of the 8 men tried for the bombings at a workers' rally at Chicago's Haymarket Square in 1886. Although it was clear he was not even present when the bomb was thrown, Albert was convicted and hanged. After losing her beloved husband, Lucy kept up the fight for working people. She was a founding member of the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World. She continued to speak and write for the causes of women's rights and workers' rights. Because of her activism, the Chicago police called her more dangerous than 1,000 rioters. In 1915, she helped to lead a hunger march of thousands of people in Chicago. At the march, the iconic labor song Solidarity Forever was sung for the very first time.
Solidarity forever.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, I think back to, the Clinton era, where we were sold on this idea that this was going to be great. We're going to open up trade. We're going to open up the largest market in the world to our products, and it was going to be great. You know, people who are making 3 cents a day. We're going to be able to buy our farm equipment and all this. Understand, they knew agriculture was going to make out huge. Agriculture still is a really powerful lobby in this country. So opening up China to our agriculture was really important. And that's pretty much how it got sold through. But I remember, Clinton and the corporate neoliberal Democrats saying, this is going to be great. We're going to create jobs. And I remember thinking at the time, this is going to be horrible because this is going to put us into even greater competition with desperate countries and desperate workers. I'm not against the Chinese workers, but if you're competing with someone who makes pennies on the dollar, you have a problem. And we were told, no, the American worker can compete with anyone. No, you can't. I know they love to puff up our ego and, we're the greatest. We're number one. No, you're not going to out-compete. One person is not going to beat 30. It's just not going to happen. Especially when you see the kind of massive investment that American corporations made over there, along with the Chinese who partnered with them, basically stole their technology. And I have no sympathy for companies that lost their technology, that intellectual property rights were stolen. None whatsoever. You deserve what you got. But what the Chinese did, and look, they were smart. They needed jobs for their people. They needed a whole bunch of investment, and they got it. They got greedy American corporations that come over there and give our future away for short-term gain. That's what happened. Corporate America got fat and happy, got rich. The investor class got rich. The working class got screwed. And you look at the country now and how divided we are. It is a direct relation to that moment. You go to those towns and look at the working people in those towns who remember how it used to be when the factory was there and those good union jobs provided good wages that reverberated through the local economy. So, Bob and Sally could have the local soda fountain and John and Jan could have the local candy store. And, mom and pop owned Main Street because you had a factory that had disposable income for working people to be able to get into that local economy and get it going. As soon as that factory went, all those shops shut down. And what came to town was desperation and poverty. And then all of the negatives, the domestic violence, the alcoholism, the mental health problems, the opioid and drug addiction, all of that stuff. And they feel abandoned. The companies left them. The unions broke up because there was nothing there left, because the unions aren't made of money. Government didn't do anything for them. So they're angry, and Trump tapped into that. He was not stupid. He tapped into...
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media